Everybody be record this.
Today is February 1st. We're beginning Mishnat Pesachim, the 10th chapter. We're going to begin by reading through, again, the 10th chapter of Masechet Pesachim very, very slowly, and everyone asks the questions that are going to help us to think and to contemplate and to go deeper. It says here, Arvei Pesachim, Samuch lemincha, lo yuchal adam ad shetechshach. Vafilu ani shebi Yisrael, lo yuchal ad sheyasev. Velo yifchatulo mearba'a chosot shel yayin, vafilu min hatamchui. Going back over it again. Arvei Pesachim, literally the evenings of Pesachim, that of course is a construct form, which really is Aravim Shel Pesachim, in other words the word Shel is missing, just like Beit Sefer, right, is the Bayit Shel Sefer, and Beit Knesset is Bayit Shel Knesset, the house of ingathering, and there are hundreds if not thousands of such usages in Hebrew, so Arvei Pesachim. Now, when one makes a plural of a construct form, let's think, Beit Sefer, the house of the book. When we want to talk in the plural of many of these houses, we are used to saying in modern Hebrew, Batei Sefer, Batei Sefer, which means that the word Bait, we're making the plural Batim, and we are omitting the final mem. Instead of Batim Shel Sefer, it's Batei Sefer. And the same thing with Beit Knesset would be Batei Knesset, houses of ingathering. Or Beit Cholim, hospital, house of the sick, Beit Cholim, Batei Cholim. That actually is not a good example of what I want to say. Not a good example. So strike that example. So
the Cholim one. The Cholim example.
Yeah, strike that example. But thinking of the plural, Beit Sefer, in the plural, Batei Sefer. Beit Knesset in the singular, Batei Knesset. Using that model, it should be Erev Pesach, and in the plural, Arvei Pesach. Why does it say here, Arvei Pesachim? In other words, what we have in front of us, both of the two words in the construct form are made into the plural, as opposed to what we normally know, which would be just the first in the plural, Arvei Pesach, like Batei Knesset, like Batei Sefer. So, although there is a Tosfot that makes a big deal about this, this form of Arvei Pesachim instead of Arvei Pesach, the truth seems to be that this is simply a alternative form of making the construct into the plural. And the truth is, in Chazal, you find this in many places. For example, I just said 2 minutes ago, Batei Knesset. But Chazal also talk about Batei Knesiot. And it doesn't seem to be great meaning in the different ways of making the plural, so we'll just take this as a given. The Arvei Pesachim means the plural of Erev Pesach. In other words, every year, whenever Erev Pesach comes around, this is what happens, as we're going to read in the Mishnah.
Is there any doubt as to when Erev Pesach is?
No, there's no doubt.
Okay, so
Erev Pesach is the 24 hours before Pesach.
Mincha, we're going to have a doubt.
We're going to have a doubt, right. So it says, Arvei Pesachim samuch lemincha, lo yuchal adam ad shetechshach. Samuch means we should know. What does it mean?
Around, close to,
around, right, resting on, literally, like we've talked about, smicha is at laying on of hands or resting upon of hands. We've talked about smichut parshiot, which is an adjacency of parshiot, right? Smichut, from the language of close to, near, laying upon, leaning upon. We talked about one smichat yadayim, that when a korban is brought, you have to have smicha, you have to lay the hands upon the korban, smichat yadayim. Smicha. And again, the phrase smicha of ordination really is part of the phrase smichat yadayim, laying on of hands. to pass on the tradition from generation to generation. So smicha or samukh means near, adjacent to, lying upon, placed upon. Samukh lemincha. Arvei Pesachim samukh lemincha. So erev Pesach, near mincha, whatever that means. Lo yochal adam ad shetechshach. Right? Shouldn't eat a man until techshach. Techshach has in it the root het shin chaf choshech, which means
darkness.
Right. So erev Pesach, when it's near mincha, a man shouldn't eat until it gets dark. And then we read the next line: Vafilu ani shebi Yisrael, even an ani, a destitute person, shebi Yisrael, that is in Yisrael, in other words, a Jewish ani, lo yuchal, shouldn't eat, ad she yasev, until he does the pula, does the activity of yasev. What is yasev?
Comfortable sitting.
Sitting comfortably. And how did they sit comfortably 2,000 years ago? By reclining, right? Yasev, to recline.
To be mesubim,
To be mesubim, right? Below yifchatu lo, yifchatu, the root is pei, chet, taf, pachot. What does pachot mean?
Low,
less, right? Lo yifchatu lo, they shouldn't give him less. It's in the plural, in the future. They should not give him less, and the him is low. They shouldn't give him less. May arba'a kosot, from four kosot, shelyayin. And you see here in the word shelyayin that even though in our modern Hebrew there would be two words, shelyayin, in the Mishnaic form, shel is a prefix, not a separate word, just like mem and lamed and hey are prefixes and not separate words. Right?
I don't have in my text. It's written out.
Because in your text, they didn't use an exact manuscript,
okay,
and it shows the influence of later Hebrew. But in the original Hebrew, it was a prefix. So they shouldn't give him less than arba kosot shel yayin, four glasses of wine. Va'afilu min hatamchuin, even from the tamchui. The tamchui is a plate that ma'ot, money, was donated to, and you put it in the kupa, as it were, in the box. It was a plate, and the plate was passed around for those who are most destitute to take their present needs for food. There are other forms of staka, but the tamchui is for those who are at the lowest level of poverty. So now that we understand the words and we don't know what they mean, we don't know what the context means, let's look at the Mishnah together with the questions that I prepared.
Can you just remind, afilu was...
Even.
Is that this word here, right here?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So in these three lines, I managed to think of 17 different questions. Unbelievable. The first question is, when do you think is mincha time? Right? The opening line says that Erev Pesach, near mincha, and in the question I'm already giving a hint that it means mincha time, so you have to think when mincha time is. Does anyone...
Is it a candle lighting is there?
So Mr. Gauss says candle lighting time.
I would say it's the earliest mincha time.
Mr. Gauss think the latest mincha time. We daven mincha on Erev Shabbat and Erev Pesach right before the holiday, but Paul says that there's an earlier mincha time. Do you know what it is? When is the earlier mincha time?
Three and a half after.
Afternoon.
Ah, okay. So in the afternoon, there's 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
If we're talking in halachic hours, so how many hours of the day is 3.5 hours afternoon?
Right. Noon. Just a little more than half.
A little bit more than half.
More than half the time through the afternoon.
But when is it exactly?
Six and a half.
You said nine.
Nine and a half.
Right. So. Perhaps people remember that indeed there's something called Mincha Ktana, which is 9.5 hours of the halachic day. Right, we begin from sunrise to sunset, or from the first light to the last light. There's a machloket there, how we count the halachic hours, whatever it is. We have Mincha Gdola and Mincha Ktana. Important to know these phrases. Mincha Gdola, the big Mincha, and that's when the day is Gadol, the day is still strong, the day is still big, Mincha Gdola. Mincha Gdola is 12 and a half hours. We're allowed to daven Mincha.
Six and a half, right?
Right. I was thinking of... Thank you very much. Okay. 6.5 hours. Yeah. 6.5 hours, which is noon plus half an hour. Half a halachic hour.
Yeah.
Whereas Mincha Ketana is 9.5 hours of the halachic day. I'll just tell you in one sentence where these things come from. Mincha Gdola is the first time of the day you're allowed to bring the korban of the afternoon. It's called the Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim, the Tamid, the continual sacrifice of Bein Arbaim of the afternoon. Right, the Torah commands us to bring Ola Ahad Baboker, to bring one Ola, one burnt offering in the morning, then Ola Ahad Bein Arbaim, another Ola, another sacrifice in the afternoon. The Tamid, the Korban Tamid, the continual sacrifice is of the type of Ola, of a burnt offering, so we call it the Tamid or we call it the Ola. The earliest time for bringing the afternoon Ola is 6.5 hours according to the Halakha, and therefore that's the first time we can daven Mincha, because Mincha is based upon the times of the afternoon sacrifice, something we learned many moons ago.
6.5 hours from the daylight. From the beginning daylight hours, whatever that means exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then Mincha Ketana, which is 9.5 hours, was the latest time that was normally brought a Korban Mincha, I should say more carefully, the Korban Tamid of the afternoon in the Beit Mikdash. The latest that they usually brought it was 9.5 hours.
9.5,
from the morning. 9.5 hours from the morning.
He said 12.5 hours into the day is the earliest, but 9.5.
Hey, right. Eric corrected me when I said 12, because I was using hour times, and I should have been using halachic times, which is 6. Noon is 6, right? So 9.5 hours is Mincha Ketana. We, of course, are allowed to daven Mincha after that, but the optimal time in the halakha is at 9.5 hours. That's called Mincha Ketana. So it's a designated time on the clock. 9.5 hours. We don't know in our Mishnah if they took Mincha Gdola, Mincha Ketana. We'll see in the Gemara an argument concerning that.
You just said that it's the optimal time to daven Mincha Ketana. So why is that considered optimal and not earlier?
Well, when I said it's the optimal time, I was basing myself on one opinion. There are other opinions. But it does make sense. No, I won't say anything because I'm not sure.
Because it's the Korban was brought up that time.
Yeah, but it wasn't always brought then. That's just the latest time that it was usually brought. So that's why I corrected myself. I'm not sure. So, we don't know if it's Mincha Gdola or Mincha Ketana. But another question, we don't know exactly what is Samuch. It doesn't say that Arvei Pesachim at Mincha time you shouldn't eat. It says Samuch leMincha, which is probably sometime before Mincha, but how long before Mincha, we don't know. Okay. Now we go on to the end of that sentence in the Mishnah, Ad SheTechshach, right? So it had said that Arvei Pesachim near Mincha time, a person shouldn't eat ad sheteqshach, until it gets dark. Well, we actually have a halachic issue when that is. When is darkness? Right? You could talk about the beginning of darkness, which is what we call shkiat hachama, right, the going down of the sun. Or we can talk at the end of darkness, when it gets pitch dark, which is what we often call tseita kochavim, the going out of the stars. And the period between shkiat hachama, the going down of the sun, and Seta Kochavim, the going out of the stars, between the beginning and the end of the night,
of Ben HaShemashot.
It's called Ben HaShemashot, between the suns. And it's not clear when it says Ad SheTechshach, until it gets dark, at what point is talking about the beginning of the nighttime or the end of the coming of the nighttime. Is it Shkiat HaChama or is it Seta Kochavim?
Talking about time period in between, says.
It's called Bein HaShemashot, between the suns, literally. Bein HaShemashot, which is something between 40 minutes and an hour and 10 minutes, Bein HaShemashot, depending on where you are in the world and depending on what halakhic opinion you accept as concerning how dark is dark.
It's
complicated. So, right, it is very complicated. But there's a question I asked in the sheet here, which is number 4, which is important. In addition to Ancha Techshak, what other requirement do you know there to be in order to eat at the time the Mishnah is referring to? Everyone in this room knows another requirement that has to be fulfilled to eat at the time the Mishnah is talking about.
Chametz.
That's not a requirement to eat. It's a requirement of that day. You're right. But a requirement to eat. He said something about Bidikat Chametz. But there's another requirement, and you're all going to hit yourselves when you realize how simple it is. Say it again?
Shema?
No?
I was going to say that you lack your diet.
Okay. That's very good. What if you're not eating bread?
Yeah.
You're very close, Eric.
Kiddush.
Right?
Right.
There's a requirement on the beginning of Shabbat and the beginning of all holidays that you say Kiddush before you eat. Now I wonder about this Mishnah. It seems to be missing something. And it could have said on Erev Pesach, near Mincha time, don't eat until you make Kiddush. That's really the halakha, right? Halakha is, well, let's go back a minute. It's telling us something about not eating before the onset of the holiday, right? Before the Seder, it's telling us you shouldn't eat. And we'll talk another few minutes why you shouldn't eat. But anyway, you shouldn't eat from a certain time in the afternoon, whenever it is, until you make Kiddush. Before Kiddush, you can't eat. So why does it say, instead of saying, until you make Kiddush, why does it say, until it gets dark?
It could be that it's assumed, that Kiddush is assumed. That's what I had thought when I had read it initially.
Okay, Kiddush is assumed.
Is this the same question to say, or why doesn't it say, don't say Kiddush until dark? Why does it say don't eat until dark?
David just answered the question.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it's adding the halakha that you can't make Kiddush until dark. It could have said you can't eat until the holiday begins, until you make Kiddush. It could have said that. But no, it said until it got dark. Now let's think a minute. Everyone in this room has made Kiddush on Shabbat before it gets dark. Right? We accept Shabbat here earlier, many times in the summer. And the assumption is we don't violate the halakha. There is a halakhic mechanism that allows us to likabel the Shabbat mukdam, to accept Shabbat early. This is telling us that you can't accept the holiday of Pesach mukdam. You have to wait until Shetekshach to begin the holiday. There's a certain connection between the celebration of the Seder and the actual time of darkness. It's nothing that you can play with. Shabbat you can accept earlier, but you can't do the Seder earlier because the Seder is intrinsically related to Zman Yitziat Mitzrayim, the time that we left Egypt. And the verses say we left Egypt Balayla. So you can't make the Seder until...
The Kiddush is not counting as into the four courses.
No, it is. Oh, it is.
Separate.
No, it is, Mr. Gallagher.
It
is. Right? The first of the Arba Kosot is Kiddush.
It's Kiddush, yeah.
Right? So you can't have any of the Arba Kosot. You can't begin to say that. You can't make Kiddush ad Shetekshach. And that's an important halakha. Because, you know, sometimes it's really late and we want to begin. You can't begin until it gets dark.
But the way it's phrased here, it makes it even more confusing. Because by saying, don't eat until it gets dark, that implies, but you can say Kiddush. That's not eating.
Right.
Ah, you know what? David just reminded me, thank you, that I have to redo these sheets. Because last night, as I make them up, I said to myself, I have to ask on the sheet a question, what ambiguity is in the word yochal? And I forgot to put that into the sheet, but David just reminded us that the word eating, both in Hebrew and in English, can have a double meaning. To eat can mean to imbibe solid food, but sometimes the word eat can include the process of drinking. Sometimes it doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
There's, by the way, of course, there's hundreds of examples in Hebrew and in English. When I say day, do I mean 12 hours or 24 hours? Right? When I say wheat, do I mean just, well, this is hard to do in English. In Hebrew, there are different types of wheat. There's the main category of wheat, and there's subcategories that sometimes included in wheat, sometimes not. I won't get into that. So anyway, when it says Lo yochal adam ad shetechshach, a man should not eat until it gets dark, eating here includes probably drinking. In other words, you can't imbibe anything. And I'm going to make a note to myself to add that into the sheet.
Rabbi, I have a kasha on that, because a difficulty.
Yeah.
I think it was Rava. They would drink wine. The Talmud says they drank wine erev Pesach.
Very good. We're going to get to that.
To make themselves hungry.
Right. Oh. Yeah. Mm. Very good. We're going to get to that. We are going
I've
to get
used
to that
excuse before. I mean, oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Motivator.
Right. Right. The question is going to be not only what type of solid foods are forbidden when it says lo yuchal, but the question is going to be, does it include liquids, and what type of liquids? Right. Mm-hmm. It does seem pretty clear that it means that we can't drink wine until the evening. But it's really going to be a problem if we see that there are rabbis who are drinking wine before the evening. So we'll have to get to that. Very good.
Couldn't you say that Yochal just refers to the Seder? Can't start the Seder until it's dark.
But what do you mean? You can't start the framework. You can't start that framework.
You can't sit down and start the Seder.
But the Seder begins with drinking.
Right.
He's just answering the question by interpreting Yochal that way.
So I don't understand. It sounds to me like you're trying to have your cake and eat it too. In other words, you're trying to say it forbids. It says you can't begin the Seder, which begins with drinking, until it gets dark, but you're still allowed to drink wine beforehand?
Yeah.
No. Is that really... Isn't that
I'm sorry to jump in, but it seems to me he's interpreting the word Yochal to just mean the process of sitting down to your Seder meal. That's what that means.
I hear. Yeah.
You're sitting down to your Seder meal, don't begin that until dark. That doesn't mean you can't drink. You can't eat. We've said you can't eat explicitly before,
mm-hmm.
but you can drink.
And that eating that you can't... Okay. It's a little bit difficult. We'll probably have to go in that direction. It means you can't sit down to your Seder meal. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I am of the opinion that the ochel here refers to anything associated with the meal, be it solid or liquid.
Yeah.
If I want to go down your path, then I would find myself asking the question, Adam refers to who exactly?
Yeah.
Would the argument be women, avadim, slaves? I mean, if I'm going to open one door, might as well open both doors, is my mm-hmm. point.
Okay. I assume it means all Jews, but we could look into that. Let's see if the Gemara says anything about it. Okay.
I would find rationale for an answer in the reasoning behind why would we refrain from eating for a while?
Oh, huh. Bartanura has that.
I have it also.
Oh, okay. Right.
And the reason I would assume is so that we have the appetite to fulfill the mitzvot of, you know, what during the and taking the wine is part of what we're. I mean, I know we're supposed to eat the karpas, we're supposed to eat matzah, and having the wine also is that's fulfilling mitzvah. Okay,
yes.
So yes. I would think that not having liquid also would prepare you to be able to mm-hmm. have the liquid mm-hmm. as part of the mitzvah. So,
okay, you actually answered the next question.
I did.
Which was number 6. What do you think might be the rationale of the requirement that lo yuchal adam? And a pretty simple answer is indeed so that you'll have an appetite for the foods of the Seder. But let's think a second. Why is it important to have an appetite for the foods of the Seder? It can only be important if there's some type of mitzvah to eat the foods of the Seder. And indeed, like you were talking, let's be more specific, the different foods of the Seder. Some of them are mitzvot d'oraita, some of them are mitzvot d'rabbanan. Right? The wine is a d'rabbanan. It doesn't say in the Torah to have four glasses of wine, not even three or two or one. But it does say in the Torah to eat some of the other foods.
Right,
matzah.
Specifically matzah.
Maror.
Maror.
And?
Karpas.
Maror.
The Pesach
and
offering.
Right, and the Korban Pesach. And the Korban Pesach. So now let's think a second. The three mitzvot d'oraita that are to be eaten at the Seder, Pesach, matzah, maror. When I say Pesach, I mean Korban Pesach. And the matzah and the maror. Is there any hint in the Torah, and this should be easy because we read it just yesterday, any hint in the Torah of the need to be hungry, to have an appetite, to fully eat those things with gusto when you imbibe them? Is there? There is.
Yeah, because it said you can't leave it.
Oh, very good. That's a gold star, right?
Can't leave any.
Lo tatiru miminu ad boker. The Korban Pesach, you can't leave until morning, which certainly implies you better be hungry when you eat it.
So vegetarian, wasn't it part, like the last part of the meal, wasn't it kind of the dessert type of like course? That kind of
They
didn't eat it with an appetite to...
Right, there's a halakha that the Korban Pesach nechala lasova. The Korban Pesach is eaten when you're already full. That you have the Korban Chagigah, it's referring to, right? You have the Korban Chagigah, and then you eat the Korban Pesach al hasova, on a full stomach, which does seem to contradict what we're saying. And the truth is, I just thought of that last night, about this contradiction, and I guess I
telepathically.
Because Sam apparently was saying the same thing last night. I don't know the answer to that. I didn't look it up. So even though it would seem...
I say Sam should be officially welcomed into this group.
Very good. Okay. Well, that is his official welcome.
Yeah.
This is official welcome. So even though we can find, it would appear, a basis in the Torah for this halakha, in other words, lo tatir mino ad bokeh, don't leave until the morning, which means you have to eat it with an appetite, which means you shouldn't eat beforehand. Things make sense, but Sam points out that that doesn't actually correspond with the halakha. Okay, question mark, it doesn't correspond with the halakha. That because there is a halakha that we eat the Korban Chagigah first, which is the Korban that comes with every holiday, and only afterwards do we eat the Korban Pesach. But in any case, there is a halakha here that you have to refrain from eating Erev Pesach in order to enter into the holiday with Teavon. And the truth is that the halakhic sources talk about eating the matzah with an appetite. And they don't talk about eating the Korban Pesach with an appetite. You know, I'm not sure how that developed.
We don't have a Korban Pesach.
Today we don't have a Korban Pesach in any case. But even the type of the temple, they didn't eat the Korban Pesach with an appetite. They ate it only after having the other Korban. Okay.
Okay. The other issue is, that's just something to put on the table, is if eating refers to bread or washing, there's nothing you really can't eat anyway because...
Right. That's a very good question.
You can't eat, matzah's forbidden to eat, and bread's forbidden.
Right, that's a question that a lot of the commentators deal with. What is it telling you when it says you can't eat this afternoon? You can't eat anyway. There's nothing to eat. Right, bread you can't eat. It's been forbidden from 12 hours of that day, or 11, again, from 6 hours or from 5 hours, ready from the end of the morning, can't eat bread. You can't eat matzah. It's a halakha for at least 24 hours before Pesach. You can't eat matzah so that matzah is new to you when you get there. So what? Oh, that means that all that's left to eat is meat and fish and eggs and fruit.
And that's not eating.
And then the problem is that in many cases when the halakha says you can't eat, it means you can't eat bread, but you can eat those things. But those things, like I said, chicken and meat and vegetables, are the only things you can eat anyway. Did I say that clearly? I'm not sure if I said that clearly.
Yeah.
Yes. So why would you say it if it's not eating? Would be the question then.
Right. If those things aren't eating,
why would you say?
Then what is this forbidding?
Yes.
And Tosafot points out there's really only one food that it could be forbidding you. The assumption again is that you're allowed meat, you're allowed fruit, and you're allowed water. The only thing it could be forbidding you is matzah ashira. Matzah ashira would mean a type of grain product that is not chametz, but it's not bread either. It's not matzah, and it's also not bread. So you would be allowed to eat it at this period, and now it says you can't eat it. So you have a teavon, so you have an appetite.
You used to serve egg matzahs.
Egg matzah, Ashkenazim, something called egg matzah.
Serve it in the
Pesach
in the
cakes.
Hotels, yeah.
It's right. Flour with fruit juice.
In the daytime, before Pesach, Erev Pesach. You eat a different matzah, you know, egg matzahs or different cheaper matzahs, not the real matzah.
So according to Lisa Tosfot, the only food here that it's forbidding you from eating, is matzah ashira, rich matzah.
The regular matzah.
Because it's not chametz, but it's also not the matzah that you have to refrain from eating so that matzah will be new to you when the Seder comes.
And how do you know that this isn't the source or this isn't the place where it's telling you don't eat bread at that time?
Because the reason that you can't eat bread at that time is not in order to go into the holiday hungry, it's doraita. In other words, I'll tell you why it's doraita. We usually think of the holidays of Pesach and the holidays of Chag HaMatzot as one holiday that goes on for 7 days. And it begins with the Seder and goes on. But if you look clearly at the Torah, there are two different holidays. One is Chag HaMatzot, it begins with the Seder and goes for 7 days. The other is Chag HaPesach. Chag HaPesach actually is a holiday that does not begin in the nighttime. It's a holiday that begins in the daytime. Pesach is the 14th of Nisan. It's a separate holiday. And on the basis of the rabbi's understanding of the Torah, which is a pshat, that the 14th of Nisan is a holiday, we're allowed to do work on that holiday, but that holiday has, during part of that holiday, an Isur Chametz. For real, Isur Chametz. It's already a holiday at noon on the hours before what we call Pesach. And that's dealt with at the beginning of Masechet Pesachim.
I don't want to argue and say that this means Lo Yochal means Lo Yochal, not allowed to eat, which means food going in the mouth.
You could make a good case for that, right? Lo Yochal means Lo Yochal, very good. Right, usually I accuse Reuven of not saying with the pshat, but now he's exactly on the pshat, right? Lo yochal means lo yochal.
Right.
Do I know why it was never interpreted like that? Well, no, but Chazal took it as a given that you're allowed to eat candy on Erev Pesach. You're allowed to eat meat and cheese and fish on Erev Pesach or any other time it says Lo Yochal. I guess the assumption is that since we know the reason for it, in order to have a teavon, have an appetite, the rabbis assumed that the only thing that really takes your appetite away are wheat products. No one in those days had a meal that was just meat. Right.
There's a truth to that, I think, from a personal experience. Eating meat, you usually don't get as satiated as having bread or matzah with it.
Okay, I don't have a similar experience as yours, but...
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, me either. Meat, potatoes, or...
So we have the...
Yeah. Okay, so we're going on now.
So can I, of course. Back on my original question, couldn't we argue that Lo Yochal really just means sit down to the Seder, because the rest of that sentence talks about the ani, that he shouldn't Yochal till he reclines. Isn't that really referring to the Seder? Mm-hmm. And not just... It doesn't make sense if you say Yochal means don't eat in the afternoon before the Seder.
Well, I'm saying, and let's examine it right now, That's actually two sides to the coin of Lo Yuchal. On the one hand, it says Samuch Lemincha, which gives you an opening time from a certain time you can't eat. And then it says Ad Shetechshach, until a closing time. Had it not said Samuch Lemincha, had it not given an opening time, but just the closing time, had it just said Erev Sachim Lo Yuchal Adam Ad Shetechshach, that would mean you can't start to say it until a certain time. But since it gives an opening time, Samuch Lemincha, it's certainly giving me a period of time during which I can't eat. So it's saying two things. It's saying you can't eat from X to Y, and it's telling you you can only be in the Seder from Y. I don't see any other way to understand it. There's two different focuses here.
So far we have the problem that it's Peshitta. It's the simple meaning that we can't eat because there's nothing for us to eat, to wash on.
Right. So I said Tosfot gives an example that it's a Matzah Ashiyah.
Okay,
let's go on to question 9. This is going to be a hard question, I think. But it's an important question for things we'll see in the future. In what sense is this whole matter of Lo Yuchal Adam, this matter of not eating in order to be hungry, a bit superfluous given the fashion in which the Seder Pesach is conducted today? Today in the year 2000
We first have in Ma'ariv and Shul, and then we walk home from Shul, and then we schmooze with...
And you don't eat until about 11:30 at night.
Right. The whole halakha makes no sense.
Right.
Makes no sense. And what Eric said is certainly true, but even putting that aside, even were we to begin the Seder exactly at Hashecha, at darkness, we wouldn't eat for a good hour and a half, even two, because we have all of the glass of wine and mitzvat magid, and the Hazal say, as we know, that kol hamarbel esaper b'yitzat Mitzrayim arezo mishubach. And anyone who takes more and more time to tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, Hareza Mishuvach, behold, this person is to be praised. So it means that you're taking an hour, two, three, to do the telling of the story, Mitzvat Magid, and then you're sitting down to the meal much later. So why do you have to refrain from eating at 12, I did it again, at noontime, or at 1 or 2 or 3 in the afternoon, when you're not going to have the Seder meal that requires a teyavon, requires an appetite, until 11 at night? Doesn't make any sense. And just to give you a hint, this is probably, it can't be certain, it's probably a hint to something that is hinted at in many other places, that in the time of Chazal, the order of the Seder was very different than what we do today. We do mitzvat magid, and afterwards we eat. They probably ate and afterwards did mitzvat magid. They ate immediately at the beginning of the Seder, and that was important not to have eaten for a few hours beforehand. But in our time, it turns out to be rather ridiculous. You have to refrain from eating at 4 in the afternoon, 5 in the 6 in the afternoon, so that you could sit at the Seder and not eat for another 3 hours.
Oh, and it could be that Ma'ariv is Rashut also.
Ma'ariv is also Rashut. That's also true. Ma'ariv, in the time of the Talmud, wasn't davened by everyone.
Is there a bit of a history lesson here that I need, in the sense that why ever would I have... So first a question, then a comment. Why ever would I have changed the order of the Seder? There's a redundancy. The order of the Seder around. Especially since I'm of the opinion that to have done Magid portion after you've eaten, after you've had yayin, is hardly a way to concentrate on Magid. It's late in the day, you've already eaten, you've had wine.
Okay.
Some people would argue that it helps your storytelling.
Yeah. Right, this is something that we'll make a whole class of, so I don't want to say too much. But just since you asked the question, we'll say one thing, which is the following. Bisman Mikdash, the time of the temple, when the major mitzvah of the night was Korban Pesach, so you did that first mitzvah first. You did the major mitzvah first. And the telling of the story is told, as it were, through the use of the props. You eat it after and while, you tell the story after and while you're eating, because you're telling the story of what you're eating. Telling a story about the Korban Pesach. You're telling what happened thousands of years ago when we were eating the Korban Pesach. It's all around the Korban Pesach. That's why you ate first. I didn't explain fully. In the time of the temple, you had a Korban Pesach, and the Korban Pesach was the meal. Korban Chagiga and Korban Pesach. You had the meal first, which meant you did the major mitzvah first, and then you told the story that tells the story of what you just ate. But an hour a day, the meal is not a mitzvah anymore, because there's no Korban Pesach. And therefore, it wouldn't make any sense to have the meal before mitzvah magid, because the mitzvah is magid, and the eating is not a mitzvah. It's just a meal. So at some time after the destruction of the temple, after Korban HaBayit, the Seder of the Seder was changed.
Well, eating matzah is a mitzvah also.
That's true. Eating matzah is a mitzvah.
It's mentioned in the Torah.
Yeah, but the meal is not a mitzvah. The meal of whatever we're going to eat with the matzah is not a mitzvah. We'll talk about this another few weeks. Okay, so now we go on to the matter of Haseva, to the second line of the Mishnah. We'll read the line again and then we'll go to the question sheet. Vafilu ani shebi Yisrael, and even an ani, even a destitute person, shebi Yisrael, that's in Yisrael, in other words Jewish, lo yochal, will not eat, must not eat, ad she yasev, until he will do what's called haseva, until he will recline. And indeed in those days, as many of us have heard, meals were eaten, at least festive meals, were eating reclining, which means everyone had their own couch, and they had their own little table next to the couch, and they would lay down, supporting their head with an arm, and with the other arm, take food from the little table and put it into their mouth. It's actually a picture in Rav Steinzel's edition here that I will just show you. Can you see that picture? Uh-huh. It's meant to be a picture of a bed with someone lying on the bed and then a little table next to it. The reason the picture is not so good is because Rav Steinzel didn't draw it, but actually it's a apparently a drawing that they found from those days. Now we all know this because in a certain chapter of Masechet Brachot we talked about it. And you remember? You remember, right? And you remember what chapter? Too bad we don't have the Mishnah in front of us. We could look in chapter 6 of Masechet Brachot. Yeah. We talk about the fact that before they do Haseva, everyone says their own Brachot over the appetizers. But once they do Haseva, Echad Mevarech LeKulam, one says the blessing for everyone. So you have a picture of people milling around in an anteroom, perhaps even sitting, but it's basically the period before the meal, and the hors d'oeuvres, or the appetizers, everyone takes themselves and eats and says the bracha. But when they recline, in other words, when they go into the central room, begin the banquet with everyone on their own couch, that's when they're considered to be part of a communal meal, and then, Ahad Mevarech LeKulam, one says the blessing for all of them. Could you imagine this room with all these couches on the perimeter, and I guess perhaps even couches in an inner circle, and we're all reclining with our own separate trays in front of us, and Ahad Mevarech LeKulam. So that's the way things were done at festive meals, and the Mishnah tells us that there's a requirement, a specific requirement, even if you never, ever, ever do Haseva during the course of the year because you're too poor and you don't go to festive meals and you don't have a room, a banquet hall in your apartment or in your house to recline in that fashion. You always eat sitting down or even standing if you have no chair and table in your house, you're so poor. But even those aniyim, they have to eat at the Seder time be Haseva.
We also mentioned that circumstance, I think, in the context of Brachot, when we were talking about whether you sweep before or after, because we were considering whether, you know, the servants would take away the little table with the food.
Right, you're right. The little trays have to do with the idea that everyone is on their separate couch.
I mean, I think that was an assumption.
Right, separate couch, partially reclining. And of course the idea is that even the ani that never reclines, he has to act as a free man, as an aristocrat on Leila Seder, even if he really doesn't have a couch and doesn't have pillows, he has to do it on the floor. Has to at least go through the motions of acting the way free people do. Okay, so we get to question 12. When is the Mishnah referring to when it says Lo yuchal adam ad sheyaseiv? So that's easy. It's referring to the Seder, right? You can't eat before the Seder begins at all. When can you eat? Ad sheteichshach. And when you eat, at that point, you have to eat b'haseiva, while reclining. You can't eat ad sheyaseiv. Okay. I just answered question 13. And we get to now the third phrase of the Mishnah.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
I thought this was actually, when I looked at it, I thought it might be telling me that it says lo yochal, that a person, like above it said lo yochal, we thought it was referring to all of us. You know, we are not allowed to eat until the dark. So also here the same phrase, lo yochal, I think it must be referring to all of us, that we're not allowed to eat until the Ani next door has a place to do a seba. Let's say he doesn't, you know, it says kol dichvin, everyone who's come and eat.
Mm-hmm. But let's see, how could that fit into the words? The words are v'filu anisha b'Yisrael lo yuchal ad sheyasev, even the poor of Israel shall not eat until they recline. I don't see how we could read that in the way you're saying. It's a nice idea, but yeah. I don't see how it would fit here into the words.
Well, I want to give a slightly different reading, too.
Okay.
And that is that the first sentence says, don't eat until it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about everybody in that first sentence?
Well, it says
no, not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you're starving, if you haven't had what to eat, and now in the afternoon some food has come to be available to you, you of course can eat. You need to eat.
Yeah.
Oh, but now it says, no, we even mean a poor person who's destitute. In the afternoon, even he can't eat then, even though he hasn't eaten for a day, and he will be hungry tonight, and we don't care. He can't eat then until the Seder time.
Okay, so that's good, and that's actually what the Gemara says.
Okay.
And so let's point out what that requires us to do in the way we read the words. Before we read the words, I will...
You have to take out the period.
Very good, very good. But I want to say something earlier. I don't know how one says this in English. There's a phrase in Hebrew. When a certain phrase of a sentence is functioning in two different parts of the sentence, and what you would have thought should be done is to repeat that phrase twice. But it's only written once, referring to what comes before and to what comes after. What David said is that. Let me show you. Reading the Mishnah. Arvei Pesachim samuch lemincha, Erev Pesach near mincha, lo yuchal adam, a man shouldn't eat, ad shetechshach. Says David, don't put the period there, but go on. V'afilu anisha b'Yisrael, and even a poor person. Stop. And the truth is that there's even a text that doesn't have the vav at the beginning of the word afilu. The first word of our second line,
mm-hmm.
There's a text that doesn't have the vav there, such that you read the whole thing, I'm read the whole thing in Hebrew. Arvei psachim samuch lemincha lo yuchal adam ad shetechshach afilu anisha b'Yisrael. Stop. A man shouldn't eat until it gets dark, even anisha b'Yisrael that hasn't eaten for a few days, unless it's pikuach nefesh, he can't eat. Even he can't eat, even though he's very hungry.
But did you say even if it's life danger?
No, he said aside from that.
If it's life danger, it's because nefesh, of course he can eat. But if it's not a life-threatening hunger, then even he can't eat.
So there are texts that have that?
Texts that don't have the vav, yes.
Okay, but you have no way of knowing that the stop is after...
Right, so let me finish. Okay. However, if I would read like I did now, and stop after the word Yisrael, right? the second line, Afilu Anisha B'Yisrael, stop.
Then you're last.
Then the next four words are a hanging clause that make no sense.
Right.
Lo Yochal Ad She'yasev, as a separate sentence that makes no sense. There, what we have to say is that this sentence that ends with Lo Yochal Ad She'yasev, won't eat until he reclines, it certainly begins with the three words before, Afilu Anisha B'Yisrael. Even a poor person in Israel won't eat until he reclines. That's certainly the sentence.
Unless you take out the period.
I'm sorry.
No, wait a second. We'll get to that. Wait a second. So if we want to accept what David said, that the words Anisha B'Yisrael connect to the previous line, we still have to say they connect to their own line. In other words, they have a double usage, and that's certainly possible. As if they're written twice. I read it like this, in English. Erev Pesachim near Mincha, a man shouldn't eat until it gets dark, and even Ani B'Yisrael. The next sentence is, even Ani B'Yisrael, I'm repeating it twice, can't eat until he reclines. And that's certainly possible. That's not completely impossible for the phrase Anisha B'Yisrael, poor man Israel, to be used both for the first sentence and the second sentence. And then Brooks says,
but you were trying to say something.
If you make it an introductory clause to the next phrase, then it could make sense.
Make what an introductory clause?
If you make
that you don't
eat until you recline, and the next, then that.
But the next phrase still doesn't have the subject of any sense. We still need a subject. Lo yuchal ad she'yasev, shouldn't eat until he reclines. Below yifchatu lo, and you shouldn't give him less than arba kosot. But who are you talking about? You still have to go back to the words ani shebi Yisrael. Okay, so that certainly could be true, that the words ani shebi Yisrael are functioning in a dual fashion. All right, just write a note for me. Dual function.
It's a bit forced though, isn't it? It feels a little bit forced. That reading?
I don't know.
Okay. Just because we're reading it with a period, okay, maybe that's why.
Okay, so let's go on now.
This is a question. Filled with irrelevant questions. Ani shebi Yisrael. I've been staring at that for 30 minutes asking why the word is there.
Right. That's a good question.
I'm with you.
First time it hasn't been a completely baffling, silly question. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. Afilu Anish B'Yisrael. Wow.
That's a good question.
He didn't get kares.
That's what I wanted to say.
Say again?
He didn't get kares for any reason. He wasn't cut off.
But he's still part of Yisrael, you mean?
But the question is, why do you have to say it has to be a Jew? In good standing or not. That's all that these rules are talking to. That's the only people its rules are talking to, is Jews. So, all the rules could say that.
But
if you're a Jew, do this.
There's B'nai Melachim. Like B'nai Melachim, there's a sense of Cherus, like a kingship.
Right.
Where an Ani might feel, you know, he's not such a king.
Yeah, but I understand. But why does that have to say Shabbi Yisrael? We know.
The word's not necessary. It's not
all the rules in this whole book are addressing Jews.
Because there's an expression in modern Hebrew, they say, Mashimcha B'Yisrael. But it's superfluous. Why do you need to be Yisrael?
I like Reuben's explanation. It's kind of builds them up a little bit. Instead of just saying the four folks.
I don't see that. I don't see the answer. I would say that a gold star to anyone who comes up with an answer to that.
Okay.
I don't know.
I brought up the question.
It's an idiomatic expression.
It may be too simple, but even the extreme poor person has to go by the rules on this.
No, you're right, Paul, but that still doesn't answer the question that Martin are asking.
Why it says Israel.
Yeah.
What else could it say? What other term could it use?
Just say Ani. Just say Ani.
Because it's saying,
well, because it could be any Ani.
No, but Paul, the point of our question, I think, is every sentence in this whole book is addressing Jews. It doesn't nobody it's not ever talking about anybody else. That's a slight exaggeration, I know, but I mean essentially every sentence is talking to Jews. That's the question. It's not talking to other Hanis.
I have an idea. Okay. That the act of not eating is already putting us in the mitzvah that we eat during the Seder take us back and have us re-experience slavery, and this not eating is already putting us in that mindset, and that it's making us all the poor people. Of Israel, yes, it is redundant, but it's explicitly stated because to make it it's making us all the poor people. You could turn it around. You could say Israel, the poor people. Trying to make us put us in that situation. It's a stretch.
Can I try something?
Yeah.
We say actually, there's somebody else. We include in our Pesach Seder, I think, by Chumash, our servants and other people who are not Jews, who are living with us, and have been circumcised but not Jews. And am I misremembering?
You're referring to certain verses that are written, but that's anachronistic because the circumcision makes them into what we call Jews.
It's not part
so
of
we can't life. Have a poor person who will come to the Seder who will not be a Jew.
No. According to the Torah, you wouldn't.
No, okay. You never had any non-Jewish.
Okay.
Something to support what I was saying.
Okay.
And it goes along with what Reuben was saying, the reclining is elevating all of us.
Okay.
Okay. So if you want to have something that's relative to that, that's in then lowering us all to the status of the poor people in order to would make sense. Saying that all people,
it's just not talking about that though. It just says even the Jews, even the Jewish poor people, don't.
But it says even the poor of the Jews. So you could say even.
It's clearly not saying all Jews.
It's saying the poor of the Jews.
Yeah.
I have an idea. Maybe it means a poor person in the land of Israel. Maybe a poor person outside the land of Israel is not obligated. Is that a stretch?
That could be, except it's not true. In other words, there's no reason to think it applies.
The Ramban says it means outside of Israel only for practice, though. Ramban says that.
I think it's speaking. this is I think directly speaking to an Ani should be Israel. It's not speaking. It's not speaking just to everybody. It's speaking directly to them.
Yes.
Right. And because of that, you have an Ani and you have a what's the other? There's two different types. An Ani. In general, is poor is the poorer one? No, he's not as poor as the he's not the poorest of the poorest. But he needs to be reminded that he should be Israel because he's looking for any way to support himself, right? He's looking for any way, so he's mixed in with the world to a point he can't to try and find a way to make a living. So this is to remind, take him out of his state of worldly survival into Israel. Like he's part of the nation. That's what I want to say.
I see it a little differently. I see it based on something that Brooks was saying before. When I see Ani and then I go to the end of the sentence, Sheyosev, I see that it's setting the tone for what's coming in the evening, for what's coming for the Seder. Yeah. Because it's setting the tone for the experience, to go from poor person to one who can recline.
Yeah, and why do you need Yisrael to do that?
I think to emphasize the fact that even on the extreme, first what I said before, that it's setting the tone for what's to come.
What and sets the tone? The word Yisrael?
Ani Shebi Yisrael, that even on the extreme, you're not exempt now. In normal circumstances, you might be
but
exempt.
But that still doesn't answer the question. Because the question is, why does it say Yisrael?
I just see it as emphasizing, putting emphasis on the mitzvah. On this mitzvah of only eating the matzah. That's how I
see
it.
Okay, I don't...
If we
I
can't
don't see
come
it.
Up with, if we can't come up with a reason, don't we have to say it's an idiomatic expression?
Yes, my tendency would be to discount everything you guys said, and to go to what Eric is saying, which is we'll just have to assume that it's an expression that's brought from someplace, that that's the way things were said,
we have it
and it has no meaning.
Wait a second.
I'm going to take a moment to perhaps learn a broader principle from what went on in the last 5 minutes. I hope I can say this properly. Speaking for myself, I prefer an unanswered question to a misanswered question. In other words, we all have a tendency, of course, to search for meaning, and that's important and it's good. And we have the tendency to believe that everything has meaning, and we want to find relevant meaning in what we're learning. That's all good, and it's all proper, but it's also dangerous. There's a danger that we will read into the text what's not there. I call that a danger. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a danger. Because I think we have a certain allegiance and we need to have a certain intellectual honesty to leave questions as questions when we don't have answers that we can support in a rational, textual fashion.
Accepting that you said that and not wanting to use the Torah as a spade.
But
I think I have a justifiable explanation because after all it does stand out. So I mean it's worthy of effort. So I think that it is saying that all Israel is poor in this, and that is why we're trying to lower the Jewish people in order to elevate through the Seder and God.
But it says a filu even.
Yes, even.
Yeah, I think it's saying, even just in case
excluding,
we're
usually
talking
pointing
about
a specific exception.
Yeah. So with great thanks to Martin for bringing this up, we're going to go on to the third phrase of the Mishnah.
Did you hear what I said?
Which begins at the end of the second line, the last three words of the second line, and it says, "V'lo yifhatulo," and they shouldn't give less to him, "me'arba chosot shel yayin," from four glasses of wine, meaning don't give him three, don't give him two, don't give him one, give him four. V'afilu mina tamchui, and even if it has to come from the emergency fund, that's called the tamchui. You can't give less than four cups of wine, and again we're talking to an ani. Even the ani doesn't get less than four cups of wine, even if it has to come from the last few cents in the emergency fund. Okay, let's ask some questions. I'm going to my sheet. Questions 14 to 17. To whom is the prepositional phrase lo referring to? That's easy.
Every Jew.
Yes, it's every Jew, but specifically in the Mishnah.
Adam and Ani.
The Ani.
The Ani, right? The Ani.
The Ani.
Right? There's this third phrase of the Mishnah is certainly going back to the second phrase of the Ani. The Ani can't eat until he reclines, and they shouldn't give him, meaning the Ani, they shouldn't give him less than four cups.
Yeah.
It seems so it's talking about lo yifkatu lo, he is singular, the ani, whereas the subject of the verb is plural, they shouldn't give him, and who is the they?
The community.
The community, in other words, it's the responsibility of the Jewish... Well, it's something larger. It's apparently the community. The community that administers the tamchui. We have to make sure that we provide, as a community, we provide 4 cups of wine for even the poorest of the poor. That certainly is a chidush. You might have said, okay, we have to provide him with food so he doesn't die. Perhaps we have to give him the mitzvot doraita, right, of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, but to give him wine, it's only a mitzvah de Rabbanan.
Yeah.
But yes, we have to exhaust all the community funds even to give him enough for the 4 kosot, which are only a mitzvah de Rabbanan, but apparently it's very central to the Seder. Let's go on to another question. We just did 15. The subject of the verb, it's the community, yifchatu. What might we learn about the place of yayin during this evening? Question 16. From the fact that the Mishnah used the expression lo yifchatu and not a positive and precise expression. What's imprecise about lo yifchatu?
Not less.
Right? It doesn't say give him 4, it gives him not less than 4. That implies that you might be giving him 5 or 6 or 7. So apparently, I have no other way of reading it, but apparently it's a good thing to have even more than 4 cups. Even the ani. The ani, the poorest person from the tamchui, give him at least 4. Doesn't it give him 4? Give him at least 4. Which means it's better to give him 5. And if it's the ani that's going to take from the tamchui to take 4 or 5 or 6, then it means us. We should be really drinking it up.
Is it Rabbi Myers did 6?
Say it again?
Rabbi Myers.
Did 6, you're saying?
2 means
there's
6 less.
Redemption.
Uh-huh.
In the verse.
So you see here that there must be some type of matter, drink a lot of wine at the say there.
I disagree.
You disagree, okay.
I think it means just what it says. Don't give him less than the 4 cups.
Well, so why doesn't it say give him 4 cups?
It doesn't say that. It says don't give him less than four cups.
But it could have said give him 4 cups. Why did it not say give him 4 cups? What did it say give him at least 4 cups?
Don't give him less than 4 cups.
So it could have said give him 4 cups.
Well, we have could three have. States. Yep. Less than... Less than equal to more than.
It's kind of emphasizing that he shouldn't have less than 4 cups.
I understand, but still, it could have been said differently. It could have said, give him 4 cups.
Okay.
So I would think that there's something to be learned from the fact that it didn't say that, but it said what it says.
It's only a revia, so it's not like you're getting drunk.
It could be.
Right. Well, I would get drunk even from one.
Right. You can make him drunk. Get him drunk.
It could be pointing out something important about the wine and that you should drink more, or it could be avoiding...
You know, when does he have a chance to drink?
It could, because if you said, give him 4, that forbids more.
Uh-huh.
And it's not forbidding more.
But I would think it should forbid more because this is the money, this is the community emergency fund. Right? There's no other money.
Well, or it might just be in your house. Give it.
The Tamchui is a community, is the community fund. The Tamchui is the community fund.
Well, that's a tail end of the sentence, isn't it?
If you have to take it from the Tamchui, you have to give him...
But this sentence, the main part of the sentence is not from the Tamchui. That's...
Okay, could be. Okay, I won't make a big deal about it. Okay, last questions here brings us to question 17. What might be the common denominator between haseva, the reclining, and the kosot shel yayin, and the cups of wine, such that they are both mentioned in the context of the ani? And we have here two mentions of parts of the seder that have to do with the ani. Both haseva and 4 cups, even the ani have to have them get them. What's the common denominator of those two things?
Those are the rich person things.
Right. That certainly is one possibility. These are things you might think that are only going to be limited to the rich. Why limit to the rich? Because only the rich have the possibility of doing them. Only rich people usually have a lot of wine and have couches to recline. So here we're saying... don't think that at the Seder, those things are restricted to those who usually partake of them. But on this night, everyone is, as it were, rich and aristocratic and free.
Didn't we say a while ago that everybody was drinking wine that was like their normal drink?
I was afraid someone was going to say that, because Steve's right. I'd say that's a gold star.
Well, you said that.
Right, because so the truth is that wine is really not something that special in those days. That's what they had to drink is wine.
Right. Well, it's still expensive. It took a lot of work, I think, to make the wine.
But perhaps 4 cups of wine, Steve, that is only for the rich.
So, how big are the cups again?
Like, it's not a lot. Revi'it. Revi'it is the minimum. Doesn't mean that every cup is just a revi'it. But Steve does have a good objection to what you said.
Yeah. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah.
And does that also imply, it seems like the ani gets 4 or more, but what about for the rich people, the other people? I mean, it sounds like, is there an ending of giving the ani more than the other people?
No.
To make him feel like he's part of
it. I don't think giving him more. So again, it could be that the ani certainly wouldn't drink 4 cups of wine in one meal, but here, right. So that is the quantity of wine is the emphasis. Also, I just point out that both of them are derabanan, not deraita. In other words, there's a kal v'chomer here. It's telling us that even the mitzvot derabanan have to be fulfilled by the ani, and even at the price of taking the money from the tamchui, because you might have thought, okay, to give him the mitzvot derabanan, or deraita, we'll take from the emergency fund, but to give him mitzvot derabanan, no. But kamash melan comes to teach us that even the mitzvot derabanan of the arba kosot have to come from the tamchui to the give it to the poor person.
We talked about wine being added to water as a disinfectant for water.
Yes.
It's also true that mixing water with wine is to stretch the wine. It's kind of like adding, you know, bread to stew. You know, it makes a poor person's meal go farther.
Yeah.
So a poor person would add more water and use less wine, you know, and a rich person could have more wine. So, I mean, just because it's common doesn't mean the amount, you know, doesn't determine who's wealthy.
Okay, so there could be truth to that, but I want to point out that I'm not certain. The Gemara goes on to say that when it says wine, it certainly doesn't mean straight wine, because straight wine is almost impossible to drink. When they have straight wine, it's so thick that it's syrup. Uh-huh. But it had to be dilute in order to drink.
But the amount is still pertinent.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, we're going to learn one more Mishnah, a short Mishnah, and then we're going to do some Gemara. So the second Mishnah is Mazgulo Kos Rishon. Beit Shammai Omrim, Mivarech Al Hayom, V'Harkach Mivarech Al Hayayin. Uveit Hillel Omrim, Mivarech Al Hayayin, the harkach mivarech al hayom.
This is very familiar.
Very familiar, thank you. It's one of the questions on my sheet. So to go back and translate, mazgulo chos rishon. They poured him. Chos rishon.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Today I think we use the word mazgu or mezeg more as a measure, more with precision than to pour. No?
Okay, then I'll say something that response to you in response to what I said to Brooke 2 minutes ago. The pouring here implies mixing with water. Really, limzog means to combine. To combine. It means they poured him wine by pouring wine and water together.
La rev.
Right.
You're taking the precision out of my question. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
So they mixed for him a mixed drink of wine and water into the Kos Rishon. Beit Shammai says, Mivarech al Hayom, v'harkach Mivarech al Hayayin. And like Eric said, we recognize that. Uvetelo Hillel Omrim, change the order. Mivarech al Hayayin, break Priya Gavin, v'harkach Mivarech al Hayom, which is Mikadesh Yisrael v'azmanim. So we recognize this. This is a Mishnah in Masechet Brachot, in the 8th chapter, right? And there it's talking about, or we thought it was talking about, Kiddush of Shabbat. But it's really talking about Kiddush of Shabbat and any Yom Tov. And it is embedded here. It's not that it's taken from Masechet Brachot and put here. It's taken from an earlier source and put both in Masechet Brachot and in Masechet Pesachim, both cases where it's relevant. And of course, the halacha is like Beit Hillel. So we're being told that we begin the Seder with Kos Rishon, which is Kiddush. I want to point out something that might become interesting later about the use of different verbal tenses. Mazgulo is what tense?
Past.
And then Beit Shayim, Shamayim Beit Hillel, Mivarech is what tense?
Present.
It's the present. It was called the present participle. So it uses both past tense and present tense in the same Mishnah. Let's see if we can make sense of that. Of course, you could say that it's different tenses because it's taking an earlier source in a certain tense and then adding a commentary to it. It's taking the source of Mivarech, and adding words that put it in the context of the Seder. Now, that's true. But still, the point I'm going to make is that the past tense is the description, the present tense is the prescription. In other words, it could have said, pour a glass of wine and say Kiddush. No, it says, rather, when a glass of wine was poured, then make Kiddush. There's no commandment here to pour the wine. The commandment is, when you pour the wine, make Kiddush. Now, that doesn't mean that there is no commandment to pour the wine. Of course, you're supposed to pour the wine. But things that are assumed, it doesn't say to do them. It says, when you did them, now I'm going to tell you what you might have a question about. And I'll tell you how to do it. There's a question, how you make Kiddush. What comes first, the Brach HaMayin, Brach HaMayom. It tells you what you do. But there was no question that you do pour the wine. So it tells you, when you pour the wine, now you do as follows. In this machlok at Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, so we'll often see that the past tense is the description and the present tense is the prescription.
That's where I was exactly going. You can't get to the second, to the machloket, until you've had the first situation described for you. However, about context, I'm questioning now how isolated each Mishnah would be, because in the context, we're all about the Ani. You have a line of Ani and another line of Ani.
Ooh, very good point.
Then we get to Mazgulo.
You get a good, another gold star today. That's a very good point.
To whom is going this Mazgulo, this word load?
Yeah.
Does it go to the Uni or does it go to everybody?
Yeah. That's just, you get a gold star too, Mr. Galler.
What?
That's a gold star question.
Yeah.
Can be redeemed at Tom Thumb on Tuesdays.
The Biur Mishnah jumps and says the Mazgulo is Lebal Habayit.
Whoa.
That's what
is that Bala Balabayas?
Oh boy,
that's what I would have thought, but what you guys are pointing out is
that... Yeah, the Balabayas, It's no, not the Oni. It doesn't go to the Oni.
Based on the context, it seems like, because before we said you don't...
They cut off the Oni.
Can you say, Eric, what you said again?
Oh, the Biur Mishnah commentary says that Mazgulo, you pour him, refers to the Bala Habayit.
Which part?
The first part of the
person who's pouring or the person who it's for?
The object.
I assume that they're pouring it for the Baal HaBayit.
Yeah.
Pouring, they're someone pouring, is
for
pouring
the, for the owner. For the owner.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm stumped by this question. And on one foot, all I can say is that it's as if the second and third lines of the first Mishnah are in parentheses. And we say Mazgulo. Now we're going back to the first line of the first Mishnah. We're going back to the Adam.
Right. Makes the regular person,
Yeah, but...
The one who conducts the Seder.
That's all I can say. So the last thing we want to say here is, notice Mazgulo, and it doesn't say whom Mazag. It doesn't say he poured, it says they poured for him, which is the basis of a custom on Leila Seder that many of you are familiar with, which is...
Everyone else has
some. Right. you get it poured for you. The derech of b'nei melachim, and that comes from this wording of the Mishnah that it's mazgu lo and not hum mazag. Now he didn't pour, but they poured for him. Okay.
It looks like we're going through a procession here. If you look at the three points we've made. First, Erev Pesach. Mm-hmm. Now, the Ani can't eat until he's reclining. I mean, he's sitting there already. Mm-hmm. And what does he have to do after he's sitting there? Is he going to have to sit there, or is he going to recline? And then we're going to start with the kosas, right?
With the first kos,
first
right.
Kos, and then mazgu lo. So we're like going.
You're right.
We're going through the procession here.
Right. This is the earliest Haggadah that we have in our possession. This is going to go through the Seder of the Seder, from the first kos to the second kos to the third, with all the different steps. And this is it. This is the skeletal Seder as we have it almost 2,000 years ago. Very good. Okay, so we're going to take now the only 20 or 25 minutes we have to look at some Gemarot. And before the Gemarot, we're going to look at Sefer HaYovlim, the Book of Jubilees. It's something you might have heard of. I'll just say very, very quickly what it is. I've probably said this before. The Book of Jubilees is part of a classification, a genre of literature that is called in Hebrew the Sfarim HaChitzoniim, the external books, Sfarim HaChitzoniim. In English, it's either called the Apocrypha, the Christians use that word, or the intertestamental literature, that's used in academia, or the pseudo-epigrapha, also used in academia. In Hebrew, again, Sfarim HaChitzoniim. These are books that were written about 200 or 150 years before the Common Era until something like 100 years after the Common Era, right? In that period of 200, 300 years. And they were written by Jews, for Jews, and about Jews in Jewish languages. By Jews, for Jews, about Jews in Jewish languages. But they never became part of the canon. They're not part of the Tanakh, 24 books of the Bible. And they never became part of the chain of Torah Shebaal Peh. Never became part of central Jewish literature. These books have been preserved for us to the present day, not through Jewish scribes and Jewish tradition. They've been preserved through the Coptic Church, through the Greek Church, and then later in the Middle Ages by the Catholic Church to a certain degree. The Hebrew we have today of these books is, in most cases, there's about 40 of them, the Hebrew is a translation from the Greek, which is a translation from the original Hebrew, or it's a translation from the Coptic, or from the Latin, that is a translation from the original Hebrew or Aramaic. In most cases, that's the way it works. So Sefer Yovlim actually is a central work in a lot of Christian mysticism, and also is a basis for a lot of Jewish mysticism in the Middle Ages. We're just going to see a passage that happens to shed a tiny bit of light on our Mishnah. And that passage is, you should have it in the booklets at the back of the...
Is it in English or Hebrew?
Yeah, it's in English.
So it's the page right after the questions. Is that right?
Yeah, page right after the questions. Yeah, so I'll take it from you. I can't find mine.
Okay. Would explanations from these works that are outside the canon end up being justifications for things in, like, Shulchan Aruch? Would it lean on
There's no Jewish halakha that's based upon what's written in Sefer Yovlim, but there are certainly traditions that are reflected in these books that independently made their way into Jewish tradition. No, it didn't come from here. Uh-huh. This reflects an earlier tradition that might have continued in oral fashions throughout Jewish history.
Can I look with you?
So here, just pointing out in Sefer Yovlim, there's a description of the Seder. The Seder was done in Mitzrayim, with the verses we read on Shabbat yesterday, the first Seder. And it says there, in verse 6, and all Israel was eating the flesh of the Paschal Lamb and drinking the wine, and was lauding and blessing and giving thanks to the Lord God, and was ready to go forth from under the yoke of Egypt. And look at verse 9. And all men who are free from uncleanliness and does not come to observe it on occasion of its day, the Korban Pesach, so as to bring acceptable offering for the Lord and to eat and to drink before the Lord. You can see I emphasize in verses 6 and verses 9 this matter of drinking. It's strange, because in the Torah, it doesn't mention drinking, it only mentions eating. The Torah says, Pesach Matzah Maror. Right? That's what they did on Leila Seder so many thousands of years ago, and that's our mitzvah Doraita. But in Sefer Yovelim, and this goes back over 2,000 years ago, he says that what did they do in Egypt? They ate the Paschal Lamb and they drank wine. Where did he get that from? So I don't know where he got that from, but I see that there's a very ancient tradition that connects wine to the Paschal Lamb. Why? I don't know. And I bring in the context of our Mishnah that seems to put a great emphasis on the wine. So I said earlier, perhaps it's telling us that even the mitzvot derabanan, we have to spend money from the community fund to give to the ani, perhaps. But on the other hand, perhaps wine is understood to be a stronger mitzvah than I thought it was. I thought it was just quote-unquote, a mitzvah derabanan. But in Sefer Yovelim, it's of the essence of the Korban Pesach. That's all. So now let's learn the Gemara as much as possible. So I brought an awful lot of Gemarot. I listed them all on the question sheet. And we'll manage to see as much as we can.
Now this means wine, not grape juice, right? Wine.
That's a very good question. Rabbi Telushkin told a story about that Wednesday night. Anyone there Wednesday night?
Yeah, tell lecture? It again. I don't remember. What was the, what did you...
Oh, I can't tell it. He told me so many stories, I forgot them all.
Steve, tell it. I wasn't there.
No, I couldn't tell the story. I don't remember.
There's another, but there's a... Grape juice has its own word, right?
It's not... Mitzalavim.
Right.
Well, in Hebrew of the Mishnah, grape juice is Yain Migito. Wine straight from the press.
Okay.
And the truth is that it could only be that because after a few days it went bad. They didn't have refrigeration. They didn't have grape juice except if you were out in the fields drinking straight from the press. So the whole question of the status of grape juice in halakha is a question. Halakha l'maaseh, people drink grape juice, and I certainly do. For kiddush, for Leila Seder. Yeah, but there are some authorities that say that you can't. That's the red wine. The Gemara actually talks about that. Okay. Says the Gemara, Samuch Lemincha, we're on page Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph in Rav Steinsaltz's edition 461 at the bottom of the page. There's a big bet there. There's a bet there.
Which one is this?
At the bottom of the page in my bracket. Samuch Lemincha, right? The Mishnah says Samuch Lemincha. And we asked ourselves the question, what does that mean? Does it mean Mincha Gdola or Mincha Ktana? Says the Gemara, Ibaya lahu. The word Ibaya, the root is bet, ayin, aleph. In Hebrew, it means need, want, or ask. I'm sorry, in Aramaic. We've said that a few times.
Question,
need, want, or ask. Yeah. Ibaya lahu, it was asked of them. In other words, the question was thrown out in the Beit HaMidrash. It was asked, Ibaya lahu, samuch lemincha gdolatanan. O dilma samuch lemincha ktana tanan. In other words, samuch lemincha gedola tanan, meaning near mincha gedola, it is learned, tanan, it's learned. O dilma, or perhaps, right? Dilma is perhaps, in Hebrew shema, samuch lemincha ktana tanan, near to mincha ktana, the 9.5 hour mincha, it is learned. It's a question. Says the Gemara, Samuch leMincha Gdola Tanan. It's talking about Mincha Gdola. How do I know? Well, it doesn't tell me how I know, but it explains to me the meaning of it. Umishum Pesach. And it's the course of the Pesach. In other words, you're not allowed to eat from 12 and a half hours. I did it again.
6.5.
From 6.5 hours.
12:30.
From 12:30. Thank you, Eric. You're not allowed to eat from noon plus half an hour because of the Korban Pesach. Dilma atei lemimshak v'atei leimnuye milme'evad pischa. Literal translation, word by word. Dilma, said means lest or perhaps. Atei, he come. Lemimshak, to continue. Let's get involved in. Get involved in it means who's eating. You can't eat because you might get involved in eating. Va'ate, and come. Le'imnoye, to refrain.
Right in the back.
Milaveevad, from doing Pischa, from doing the Pesach. In other words, on the afternoon of Passover, before the Seder, you're supposed to be in the Beit Mikdash slaughtering your Passover. And if you have a big meal at the beginning of the afternoon, you might get involved in it and forget to go to the Beit Mikdash and bring your Pesach. That's why you can't eat from the beginning of the time when people usually eat their noontime meal. That's one possibility the Gemara brings.
I'm sorry, would you say the word
yes.
again? Mil me'ed
vad. Va'atek and come. Le'im noye, to refrain. Mi le me'evad, from doing the Pischa, the Pesach offering. O dilma samuch lemincha ktana tanan umishum matzah. Or lest it's a matter of samuch lemincha ketana that we learn, tanan, umishum matzah. And it's because of the matzah, not because of the Pesach, because of the matzah. Dil ma'ate lemichla lematzah achila gasa. Lest he come lemichla to eat lematzah, the matzah, achila gasa. Achila gasa means disgusting eating. That's when you eat something when you're already full.
Mm.
Right? So it's saying, perhaps it's talking about mincha ktana, which is 9.5 hours. Perhaps you can't eat from 9.5 hours. And it's to prevent you from eating that night, the matzah, on a full stomach. So we have two possibilities. Either you can't eat already from noontime, and that's in order that you don't get involved in a meal, and thereby forgetting to bring the korban Pesach. Or it means late in the afternoon, 9.5 hours, to prevent you from going into Pesach on a full stomach, which would mean you would eat the matzah on a full stomach, which would be achila gasa, which is forbidden. That's the question. So what's the answer? The answer that the Gemara gives is, Amar Ravina, said Ravina, Tashma, come and listen. Afilu Agrippas HaMelech, Shoya Ragil, Lechol B'teisha Sha'ot, Oto Hayom Lo Yochal Ad Shetech Shach. It's bringing a source which would seem to be a Braita. And the Braita says, even Agrippas HaMelech, have you heard of King Agrippas? I once lived on Agrippa Street in Jerusalem.
Near the shuk.
Right, in the shuk, actually.
The shuk, yeah.
They have an Agrippa Street in Jerusalem?
Yeah, I lived on 21 Agrippa Street.
Wow.
So Agrippas was one of the later descendants. Oh, no, he wasn't. Okay, someone help me out. Agrippas was what relation to Herod? I can't remember. Okay, I don't remember. I don't even remember if it was before Herod or after Herod. Oh, not good. We all failed the test, including me.
It's all Greek to me.
And Martin is right. He was quite a Hellenized king. So Agrippas HaMelech, who was regil, who was used to lechol, eating, at Teisha Shot. In other words, he only had his first morning meal at 3 in the afternoon, because he slept all day, like any good king. Oto hayom, that day, lo yochal achetech shach. He shouldn't eat until it gets dark. So here's a braita that says that basically the same halakha that we learned in the Mishnah, you can't eat from samuch lemincha, we have it applied to Agrippas, and it says explicitly, teisha shot. Even the king has to refrain from eating until the time that you're allowed to eat. And it says teisha shot. It doesn't say sheshot. So it gives us the impression that the Mishnah is talking about mincha ketana. But then the Gemara says, that's the end of the Braita. Right? Hebrew comes to an end, that begins Aramaic, so the Braita is finished. Mincha ketana would be, according to this.
Tosfos says he was melech kasher b'dei chashmonai haya. He was from the chashmonai and below. That's what it says here.
But if I remember correctly, most of those Hashmonaim intermarried with Greek women.
Agrippas was after Herod. He was in the second half of the first century.
Ah, okay. Okay. Okay, thank you.
I don't have much more right now.
Great. That's Wikipedia or something?
No, that is
Okay, whatever.
It's an Israeli website right now.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so Agrippas was after Herod. Thank you very much. Okay, so it says in the Gemara, "I amirat bishlama samuk leminchak tanan, haynu ravute d'Agrippas." Translation: if you say it's okay that it's the muklim in haktana, we learned that's the explanation of Agrippa. So let's translate it like that for now. Then we understand why we have Agrippa mentioned with the 9 hours, because it's min haktana. Fine. Elei amrat the muklim in hakdolatanan, but if you say that it's the muklim in hakdola, it's from noon in the Mishnah, then why do you say that even Agrippa can't eat from 9 hours? But what do you mean? Most people can't eat from noon. And it wouldn't be right to say even Agrippas can't eat from nine. What do you mean? That makes it more lenient for him, not harder for him.
No, he's the king.
So...
can you explain that?
I was afraid someone would ask me that. The Gemara itself says that. It asks just... You'll see. If it doesn't become clear, we'll go back over it. Says the Gemara, my revote d'Agrippas. Right, I'm sorry. So we came to the conclusion, and Sam is right, it's not clear how we got to that conclusion, we'll go back over it, came to the conclusion from the Braita that mentions Agrippas, even Agrippas can't eat from 9 hours until it gets dark, says the Gemara, that shows that our Mishnah is talking about Minchak Tana, which is 9.5 hours. And it says, if you were to understand that the Mishnah is talking about Minchak Dola, which is 6.5 hours, then my revote d'Agrippas, this is the third to last line, hal isur alei mikara. What's the big deal about Agrippas? Hal isur alei mikara. Devolved the isur upon him earlier. That we can understand. In other words, if you say there's a prohibition of eating from 6.5 hours, the mincha gdola, then what could be the meaning of the Braita that even King Agrippas, who is used to eating at 9 hours, can't eat until it gets dark? He's used to eating at 9 hours. So you're saying that when he would have his first meal, he can't eat, because he can't eat. But what's the big deal? People, you can't eat from 3 hours ago. So that doesn't make any sense. So it has to be that the Mishnah says Minchak Tana. Mishnah means Minchak Tana. But then the Gemara asks Sam's question. Ela samukle Minchak Tana Tanan. Rather, it must be that the Mishnah was talking about Minchak Tana. But says the Gemara, Sof, my revute d'Agrippas. Hai matya le zman isura. In the end, what's the big deal of Agrippas? Ha matya le zman isura, behold, has arrived for him the time of isur. In other words, even if you say it's minchak tana at 9 hours, so what's the big deal about Agrippas? His law is no different than anyone else. He can't eat from 9 hours. But the answer is, mao detema teisha sha'ot la Agrippas ka'arva sha'ot didan nami. What would you have thought that 9 hours for Agrippas is like 4 hours didandami of hours? It's like Kamashmalan comes to teach us. Let's sum it up and see if we can understand. The halakha is you can't eat from minchak tana. We're assuming that's what the Mishnah says, from Minchak Ketana, 9.5 hours. The Braita says that even Agrippas, who's used to eating his first meal at 9 hours can't eat until it gets dark. So we'll say, what's the big deal? That's the same law as everyone else. What do you mean, even Agrippus? So the answer is that you would have thought that his 9 hours of the day is like our 4 hours of the day, because he gets up so late. So the Mishnah comes, so the Braita comes to teach us that even Agrippus, who, if we forbid him from eating from 9 hours on, is going to be forbidden from eating breakfast, still we forbid it to him. Even though for him it's breakfast that we're causing him to miss and not lunch.
He was Jewish?
Yes. That seems to be the explanation. So let me just say it once more to make sure I have it clear in my mind. The Mishnah can't be talking about Mincha Gdola, can't be saying that you can't eat from 6.5 hours, because then saying that Agrippus can't eat from 9.5 hours, that's simple. Of course he can't eat from 9.5 hours. People already haven't been eating for the past 3.5 hours. That doesn't explain why it says even Agrippus. So the conclusion is, our Mishnah is talking about Mincha Ktana. You can't eat from 9 hours or 9.5 hours. And then we can understand the Mishnah that even Agrippus can't eat from that same time. But then we say, wait a second, what do you mean? Why do you say even Agrippus? His Lord is just like everyone else. What's special about him? Oh, what's special is you could have thought he can eat then, because his afternoon meal is really his breakfast meal. And you would have said that most people can't eat from 9 hours. They're being told you can eat breakfast, but can't eat lunch. But for him, not eating from that time means you can't even eat breakfast. And still, even he can't do it because... And why is it a revoke? Why is it even? Why is it a big deal? Because you're telling him not just to miss lunch, you're telling him to miss even breakfast. So that's the conclusion of the Gemara, and that's the halakha, that from 9.5 hours you can't eat whatever it is you can't eat. We didn't discuss that. Whatever it is you can't eat it from 9.5 hours, which is the time of Samuch leMincha. Oh, I forgot to say, I'm sorry, that Mincha is 9.5, but Samuch leMincha is 9. It doesn't say Mincha Ktana, it says Samuch leMincha Ktana. That's how we get to the 9, and not 9.5. I'm sorry that I didn't add that very important point. And I guess, although there's so much other things we can do, why don't we end, because we said we end at 11:20.
Rabbi, can I just read one little thing here? I just noticed about the wine at the bottom and the Orach HaHalacha.
Mm-hmm.
It says, he says, Ve'ein lishtos mat yayin. A person is not allowed to drink a little bit of wine. Shemasbiya, because a little bit of wine, it makes a person feel like they're full. Ela harbe yayin, shemorea tevon. But he's allowed to drink a lot of wine.
Yeah, that's in the Gemara. That's in the Gemara. Okay. Bye. Just let me mention